Hi Kelvin. Kelvin, we had just been talking about the way Tetrionics can look at the so-called zero-point energy devices. You've brought many ideas together, and part of that is also the understanding that we can analyze the zero-point energy devices better if we better know how they work, so that we can better understand why they work. And I would like to ask you a very practical, concrete question. Within the Holoversity, I've just set up a forum for the Dutch Zero Point Energy Group. I have already invited them in the past to work together in a more direct, a more directed manner, because they are on the one hand looking at the theories for the zero-point energy devices, while in the same group there are also people who are building zero-point energy devices. So within the forum of the Holoversity, I have now set up one part for the thinkers and one part for the doers, with the specific invitation for the thinkers to actually review the theories that are proposed behind the zero-point energy devices, and to look at what these theories actually present, what foundations they assume, but also to get an overview of these theories and to see how they complement each other. I take that as a starting point, because the people involved, they do not yet know Tetrionics. They do know what the inventors of the devices claim, and they do read the so-called explanations why these devices would work. So in the group on the theoretical research, the thinker group, I would like them to look into these theories, explanations, the falsenesses of that, in a coherent and consistent manner, so that something productive can come out of that. Likewise, for the group of the doers, these are the people who are actually producing devices, doing measurements, trying to find the materials, trying to conceive configurations in which the materials can be used so that energy can be tapped. These are very practical people. They often have limitations of resources. They are looking for solutions for the world energy problems, but evidently they have difficulty to do their work because there is such an immense confusion and also such a financially driven deception about the theory behind it all. So I've come down to a very practical and simple approach. I'm inviting the thinkers and the doers in two separate environments, two separate fora within the Holoversity, so that they can actually share their findings and combine their findings. Because one of the things I find which is very problematic in this whole field of research is that although there are very many people who are doing very impressive and very important research within those fields, very often they are separated, they do not link up, very often they have difficulty to communicate their often autodidactic individual findings to others because they do not have a shared language, and also often they do not themselves quite understand what they're dealing with. For the thinkers, because evidently the theory needs to be describing something of a communal understanding in language which as yet does not exist. That's the whole purpose of theory, that we create new language by which we can better understand each other and can better describe what happens in nature. But likewise for the doers, they have difficulties to communicate with each other, because even if they get their device to work, often they do not have anything else than a photograph and a lamp that burns when something is turning.
Yeah.
If I just put it down to a very simplistic approach. So what I'm looking for is a means by which these people can do their individual work plus communicate, and that the thinkers can look at what the doers are doing and learn from that and try to describe that, basically leaving the doers at peace to do what they are doing. But likewise, that the doers can look at what the thinkers are thinking and can be inspired to think differently, so that they can do differently, so that they can explore different ways in which they can construct their devices. What I would like to ask you, assuming that the idea of two different work groups is sort of self-evident, and assuming that it is likewise understandable that both of these groups need to have their own environment in which they can do their own thing, because they are for themselves already trying to understand something which is very hard to understand. But it would be very nice if it could somehow be connected to the Holoversity Forum on Tetrionics. That in the same way as they can look at each other, that Tetrionics can look at what they are doing, that they can look at what Tetrionics is doing. And so I would like to ask a very concrete and practical question from what you are doing with Tetrionics and from what you've seen that people are doing on the theoretical and the pragmatical research. Do you see a way that what you're doing with Tetrionics, what you have provided in Tetrionics, what you're looking for in Tetrionics, what you're building by Tetrionics could somehow connect up with all that?
Short answer would be yes. I know that's not what you're looking for. But firstly, I mean, like, bravo, Otto, because what you're doing by creating the two separate communities and allowing them to look at each other's forums and cross-pollinate ideas is something that doesn't happen often enough. I mean, like, too often you've heard of a double-edged sword where the experimenters don't get on with the theoreticians, or the zero-point community doesn't get on with modern science. It's what you're hinting at is what I call the three-edged sword. And that is what's lacking for both of those to get on with each other is exactly what you said. It's the ability to communicate their ideas in a coherent, centralized way. And that's not just verbal or sending messages. That's where Tetrionics sort of drops in as the third leg. It gives a geometry that applies not just to modern physics by unifying it, but also applies to the zero-point community where they're doing their experiments. In the case of modern physics, it has the ability to unify all of physics and explain how the universe works, provided the scientist takes enough time to sit down and begin to understand the basics and ask the questions so that they can better comprehend what's going on. Because it doesn't matter if you've got one PhD, 10 PhDs, or just a high school education, they're all on the same starting block when it comes to Tetrionics. This is no different than everybody in the world sitting down learning an alien language. In this case, we're learning geometry. And that geometry becomes the basis to replace, well, not replace, but to give form to the mathematics that's used in science at present. So where we have science that's all fractured and broken and in disarray because we have multiple theories, which in turn have some aspects that work and some that don't, and no common language, Tetrionics gives them that language via the geometry. It says, this is how it works. If the geometry can give rise to your math, then it's valid. And if that mathematical description describes something that we're not aware of at the moment, let's model it and see what it's all about. And that's no different than the approach I've done in developing Tetrionics full stop, because I had to take my own ideas, use the geometry to teach me. That the process is just repeated with everyone in the scientific community. Equally, the big advantage it gives, because everyone's on the same footing, irrespective of their education, is that people in the zero point or the experimental community that have got practical working devices they wish to try and explain or understand better can now be on the same footing as the most learned academic in any chosen field, within reason. They can take the basic geometry that I provide in Tetrionic Theory and say, how does that apply to my work? What fields do we create? Is there a component in here that's the secret to why I'm making energy compared to other people that are trying similar things that aren't making energy? Or is this the component I should be focusing on, or the process I should be focusing on in order to re-explain my experiments so others can replicate it? Because ultimately, whether it's a modern science side of this discussion or whether it's the experimental zero-point community side of this discussion, we're all dealing with the scientific principle, which is create an idea, develop the hypothesis about what you're saying, refine and improve it, apply it, and then create a working model, i.e. validate it and present it in a way so that others can replicate your work. That description is the description of modern scientific theory, or the scientific method, more precisely. It's how we do science. What's happened is we've driven a wedge between modern science, as in the science group, with the academic teachings and the how they've been taught in school as to how physics works. We've driven a wedge between them and the experimenters who are out there daily building devices that create real effects that can't be explained by the scientific community. But they're both equally valid sides of the scientific methodology. We've got the thinkers and the theorists versus the experimenters and the people who apply the devices to our way of life. We've driven a wedge between them because the scientific group look down upon the results of the experimental group because they can't explain it. And equally, the experimental group look at the scientific group and say, can you explain what's going on? Because it's a real effect. There is more energy coming out than going in. And if there isn't, can you please explain why not? And because the scientific group don't have a thorough handling on science itself, you get a repeatable result. And that is that they fall out. One group says to the other group, they don't know what they're talking about. And the other group says to the other group, to anyone that listens, they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah. One of the what I see here is that, as long as that money has taken over a guiding, determining and limiting role in science, endless, and in society, that's also why the Holoversity does not operate by money. It is an environment in which, so to say, money is not allowed. That being the case, it is really about people helping each other so that they can in themselves develop further. I'd like to ask two separate reflections from your side. Basically addressing the theoreticians, the thinkers on the one hand, and the doers, the builders on the other hand. You have been working with Tetrionics. You actually started with the triangle. From that, you shoved the triangles over the table. It took you a couple of years, and then you were able to build the atoms and see how chemistry works, and how everything in the universe is the combination of the polarities of electrical and magnetic in motion. And I'd like to see if we can connect your own experience in the development of Tetrionics, which is on the one hand theoretical, on the other hand very pragmatic. You've been building devices. could you, for the two aspects of the theory and the practice, describe what your experience is in doing that within Tetrionics? So they are looking at the zero-point energy devices. You've been looking at Tetrionics. They're looking at the theory. You've been looking at the theory. They're looking at the practice. You've been looking at the practice. First, yep. What would your reflection be for the way Tetrionics and the theoretics could go together? And what would your reflection be for the way Tetrionics and the practice could go together? You've already, in a brief, addressed that by saying that the Tetrionics can help correct the theories by the grammar of the geometry. And you've already said that Tetrionics can help look for the complementarity of the electric and the magnetic by connecting it to the Planck quantum. But I'd like you to explore that idea a bit further and to put it in two parts, first the theoretical and then the pragmatical, so that the people in those groups can listen to this and can follow your thinking.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're both going to come down to the same thing, which is sort of where I was heading, and that is that the Tetrionics, as you said, gives us the grammar, the channel to communicate what is really happening in the physical world. So that applies equally to the theoretical community as well as for the scientific community as it does to the experimental community. And as I was saying, it completely levels the field as far as education. Because the scientific community are about to be awoken to the fact that they don't understand how the universe works and how their modern theories will have to be all adjusted back into what Tetrionics shows is the case for how physics works. And that's where my focus was for the last 5 years, purely because of the other side of the equation that you brought up, and that is money. When you decide to write a unified theory like Tetrionics, the first thing that goes by the way is any thought of an afternoon of peace, because your heart and soul pours into it. The other side of it is you don't get paid to spend your time writing up the theory. So anything you do, like the practical experimenters, is done on a shoestring. And I had to choose quickly. Well, it wasn't really a choice because it was forced upon me. I had to develop the theory, which meant my time and effort was poured into the development of the experiment, of the theoretical side of things, because it was the theory that was leading the direction. Everything was done in my mind. I wrote up the results, and I've tried to explain the theory as best as I can in the ebooks that I've produced. But the result is, obviously, Tetrionics can be rapidly applied to modern theoretical or scientific theory. That's not to say it can't be applied to the experimental work, because that's what I was getting at with this leveling effect. Because the experimenter, who doesn't necessarily have to have a full-blown electrical engineering degree or a science degree in order to make his experiments, can now use the Tetrionic geometry to start applying to his work. Equally, the science community has to relearn all this work. So you've got Tetrionics that can bridge both fields and offer something to both and unify not only the theory but also bring in the experimental results. But it doesn't matter what level of education or what understanding of science you have, everything's starting from ground zero, because Tetrionics builds from the ground up. So it's a whole new understanding for both communities. What you think you understand about what an electron looks like racing through a circuit or what current is versus what charge is thrown out the window. We give you physical models and we explain what both aspects are and what the geometries of them are, more importantly. And equally, the modern scientist, armed with all his theories of relativity, will find that he has to put them on the back burner and learn tetrionic theory and the geometry at the same rate as the experimenter does. But see, at the moment, there's just myself that has the fully developed understanding of the theory. But as people pick it up, go to the web, download the books, start reading them, start asking questions, as I can start doing more conferences and video and audio discussions like this and on YouTube, the information gets out. The learning process starts, just like relativity was once the idea solely of Albert Einstein in his brain. Now it's spread out through the world. Tetrionics will do the same, but this time, instead of fracturing the scientific community into modern science and practical experimenters, we're going to bring them back together so that we have both groups learning a common language that explains both sides. So we suddenly have this Rosetta Stone where, irrespective of your understanding of modern science or your ability to make a device that creates energy or rearranges energy, more importantly, releases it, we have a common language so that an experimenter can apply the geometry to his work and say, this is, on my basic understanding of tetrionics, what I think it's doing. Kelvin, can you help me and see if that's right? And equally, the physicist can now come along and say, well, look, I'm starting to get a handle on what you're saying about the QM and QED processes in your theory, and I can start to see how it applies to this guy's practical experiment. Perhaps he can improve it this way, because at the end of it, I'm just one person who had a crazy idea to use a different geometric approach to modern physics to try and explain how it works. In the end, I developed tetrionic theory, and it's nothing more than this common language for both fields to start applying. But where it's different to a language is that because it's a geometry or a geometric theory, there's no room for interpretation. There's not a case of an experimenter saying, I'm using a condenser, and the scientist saying, well, I don't know what that is, you should be using a capacitor. None of that confusion takes place because they have the same geometry. They have the same schematics, and they both use this geometry to explain the physical processes. And we can say, well, we can see the resistance in your circuits being caused because the energy is building up, or the voltage has been applied to your circuit, and it's been there too long. And while it's been there, it's caused the electrons to start moving, create the chem field, and you've got a current flow, which in turn is heating up the circuit. You don't want that. You want small, high-frequency impulses of electrical energy to achieve the same result, but without the current losses or the heat losses. We can get this dialogue between scientific and experimental communities going at long last. But the downside to it all is, despite it being a common geometric language for both, everyone's at the same starting point. I'm only 4 or 5 years ahead of them. So they all have to sort of grab what they're doing and begin to understand what I've written down and explained in tetrionic theories. Then they also have to accept it, because we're challenging what people have spent their lives learning and their own mental models of how things work. We're saying, no, it doesn't look like that. It looks and works like this. And it's all there in the theory, but I've got no doubt whatsoever, to some people this is going to be a huge learning curve, and to some people they may never accept it as a learning curve. They may always rebel against it, just like people still rebel against relativity by developing modified Newtonian dynamics and things like that to explain gravity. But I'm convinced, having done the work, that I've got a geometric approach that, even if it's not perfect, does things that are just impossible with all the theories of science out there at the moment. And it can bring this the experimental group back into the fold where we all get together, we all exchange ideas, and we have this common language and understanding to work from. It's a bit like if everyone's speaking a different language, you got the translation process and it's not perfect. With the geometry, that doesn't exist. The geometrics, as I call them, whether it's mathematics or whether it's geometry, the geometrics of tetrionics is absolutely precise. You've got no error for uncertainty. You've got no error for fudging. It is what it is, down to the last Planck quanta of electromagnetic energy. Everything is accounted for. But this learning process has to start. We've developed the theory, put it out there for everyone. Now it's a case of the world really starting to study it, understand it, and apply it. But both communities have to do it. But equally, the reward for both communities putting in the effort to learn it and understand what I'm doing is immense. They will begin to see the things that I see now and be able to, more importantly, explain things and model things in their head far more efficiently than they do now. This language barrier, be it mathematical or verbal language, will vanish. Doesn't matter what language you speak, a triangle is a triangle. You draw up the picture with the triangles in it using tetrionic geometry from a experimenter and send it to the scientific side, they will equally understand it and say, no, we need to change it slightly like this, and send it back. You don't even have to speak the same language. And that's what I see, but I do see it. Even though it solves this problem, there's effort required on the behalf of both communities where they have to be willing to read what I've written and then accept and apply it. But when that happens, say in 10, 20, 100 years, we'll be doing things that we can't even begin to imagine, and we'll have tens of thousands of people adding to the knowledge base of what tetrionics is just scratched on.
Yeah. There is something else that I'd like to ask you to follow up on this.
Uh-huh.
It's very clear in how you see that tetrionics can help both the thinkers and the builders. Something which you have implicitly described just now is how you learned to trust the schematics of tetrionics, and that you are able to look at it and see where the resistance comes in, where the time loop starts to explode, all these kind of details. Can you tell a bit more about how you learned to read the graphics, to read the maps, how that deeper level of understanding fell in place? Because you started with triangles. You had triangles with lines in the middle. Then you had the magnetic North Pole and the South Pole. You had the arrows. Later on, you had the colors. But at some point in your mind, it came to life. They were no longer letters of the alphabet. They were no longer words. You could actually see the atoms as you were building them, but more so you were seeing how the atoms were actually force fields and energy movements circling, cycling around. You started to understand when it is a capacitor, when it is a coil, when it is a resistor, when it works as a source. Can you tell a bit more about how that worked for you, how much time it took before that started to open up in you, that those who listen in on this can sort of get an idea that they need to be patient, and that it is only by doing it that actually that effect unfolds?
Sure. I mean, like, I'm no different to anyone else out there. I mean, like, fair enough, I've developed this theory, but I've developed the same way I did anything at school, and that was by the teacher rapping me across the knuckles most times, more often than not. Like anyone else, we all have our different ways of understanding things as we're taught it. School tends to say, these are the facts, learn this, be able to repeat it and show some be able to repeat it at the exam time and you'll get a good mark. Be able to comprehend it and elaborate on it, and you'll get an excellent mark. And that's how school's structured. And so that The same analogy applies to tetrionic theory. I started tetrionic theory with as much knowledge or as little knowledge as anyone else out there. My understanding of what I was about to develop and write up was non-existent. What I thought I knew, on the other hand, was completely different. I thought I understood electrical theory. I thought I understood the basics of physics and chemistry and things like that. The difference was that by beginning with the equilateral triangle in a geometric perspective, not a mathematical, but geometric, I had to explain everything I knew in the way of math and the way I had known in my mental understandings and comprehension of electrical theory using this geometry. And that meant that a number of times I came up to what I considered were very basic, well understood principles. And I would try to draw the picture using the models. And it wouldn't explain what I thought what I knew. And I'd toss and turn and I'd spend hours, sometimes days and weeks, trying to understand why it was that I wasn't getting the same answer or the same explanation of how I understood things. In the end, and I don't know whether I'm any different to anyone else or not, in the end, I just took a leap of faith, which I always inherently had in the basics that I'd discovered. I placed my faith in the geometry. And I said, if the geometry tells me this, it must be so. So what's the implications for what I've learned and my understanding of the processes? A classic example of this would be the number of neutrons in a atomic nuclei. We all know that, well, most of us know that uranium has a Z number of 92, which means it has 92 protons and 92 electrons. But its atomic mass suggests that it has 140 neutrons as well in order to make it as heavy as it is. So the classical model that you'll see on TV and in the science textbooks is of a nucleus with lots of neutrons, almost twice as many neutrons as there are protons, that magically join themselves and hold themselves in place with the electrons whizzing around. I spent months physically printing out sheets of paper, these tetrion templates, folding them and sticky taping them, making probably 200 deuterium nuclei, and looking at how these nuclei come together. It became apparent as I tried, I discovered I saw with my own eyes the convergence of the E fields of the quarks that were oppositely charged for protons and neutrons, up versus down quarks, that bring the protons and neutrons together. I then began to understand mass and energy and all these concepts. But to cut the story short, I discovered that the Z number, the only way you could build a uranium nuclei was if there was a total of 92 protons, electrons, and neutrons. In other words, the atomic nuclei of all the periodic elements were made up of deuterium nuclei, not hydrogen. And this is just how science works. In this case, I had to change my thinking from modern science's understanding of excess neutrons to make up the mass. And I suddenly had this model that looked beautiful with 92 deuterium nuclei coming together. The energy levels lined up with the atomic shells and the Schrodinger's numbers. The position and the orientation matched all the other information in Schrodinger's wave functions. I had the model, but then I had this problem. I didn't have enough neutrons. So where did all this mass come from? How did the weight come about? My model was flawed. But I fell back again on the understanding, advanced my understanding of mass versus matter, and worked out that the quantum levels of each shell was enough. When I put it in the spreadsheet and did the calculations, for all the elements, it gave me the answers for each element as if there was these excess neutrons. In other words, the changing quantum numbers of each atomic shell was enough to make 92 deuterium nuclei of different energy levels equal this classical model, or dare I say it, modern model of the atom with 92 proton electrons, or 92 hydrogen and 140 neutrons. I'd solved the problem. But I didn't solve it by finding something in the textbook or doing something exotic. And it wasn't even a flash of genius insight. It was exactly the same as any other learning process. It was a case of being rapped across the knuckles time and time again, in this case, not by a teacher, but by the geometry. The geometry is the grammar, and it is God, so far as physics goes. You cannot change the geometry, and whatever the geometry can do in a paper model is whatever you're stuck with being able to do, either with material or immaterial fields. Makes no difference. The geometry sets the rules. But if you follow it, the rewards are rich, because once I've developed that chemistry model, I could model all the elements. I knew that the upper limit was 120 nuclei for periodic elements, and I could make illustrations of all the quantum features, both in terms of mass, energy, and matter of any element in the periodic table, and in the end developed a brand new periodic table to boot, all because I followed the geometry. And it wasn't something I wanted to do, it was something I had to do, because if I hadn't done it, people would have asked questions about how tetraonics applies to chemistry, and I couldn't have explained it. I couldn't explain Bohr atomic transitions, spectral lines. I couldn't have explained Schrodinger's quantum numbers. It would have been no better than any other theory out there in physics. If tetraonics is to be believed, everything is built up from these triangles without exception. All you have is empty space, and everything else is made up of triangles of energy. But the learning process was no different than learning a language, no different than going to school. Just like you go to school with some idea of you think you know how things work, or you might have a intuitive feel for mathematics, or you're better artistically. Tetraonics is the same playing field for everyone. There is no shortcut. It can either be a simple process, if you just accept what's there geometrically and just follow it in true belief. But if you want to challenge it and fight it and say, no, my understanding is spherical charges, point charges, versus the dodecahedral geometry that tetraonics gives, you can fight all you want, because at the end of the day, tetraonics explains what it does and unifies all the theories. A spherical point charge can't. It leaves too many holes, too many unanswered questions. So I was constrained like everyone else, throwing my efforts into cracking the theory, if you like, developing it, writing it up. I'm limited by money, and I'm constrained by the fiscal problems of it, like everyone else in the world. I chose to write the theory up because it was cheaper than developing the practical experiments. I could have just followed Bedini or someone else and developed other ideas off what they'd already done, but I wouldn't have understood the physics if I'd done that. By developing the theory, I think I've unified physics for sure, but I've also opened the door for other people to understand and learn like I did. But whether it's an easy process where you just pick up the books and accept what I've put down there in order to get the grounding, because it will be expanded upon by other people. What I've done here is just a first pass of a unification theory, just like relativity was a 3-page document when it was first launched into the scientific community, and it now fills volumes of textbooks, tetrionics will do the same thing. But in the process, we'll unify these two fields. I'm no different than anyone else. I learnt it the same way as anyone else would learn something new. Except it was probably a little bit bloodier, because I can be rather stubborn at times. I don't like to give up on ideas that I've learnt. And I don't think anyone else is any different, which is why you have why it takes time for ideas as groundbreaking as tetrionics to gain traction, because the experimenters understand their model based on what their mental picture of the processes is and what they've been taught, and equally the scientific community understands physics on the basis of their mental pictures and what they've been taught is correct. Tetrionics shakes the whole lot up, but in the end we have a common language, if you like, that we can all build upon.
That's great, Carlson. You've described so well how you needed to learn to trust the model, and you had some hiccups in doing that, but also a straight and direct discovery that when you follow the model, it actually helped you understand how it all connects and how it all corrects.
Yeah.
As usual, I'd like to ask you to round off this session of this exploration by whatever you feel like formulating to put it all in place.
Okay. The only thing I'd add to there is tetrionics can be, in my mind, it's a solid theory that will yield great results. But bear in mind, I'm 5 years ahead of everyone else on the planet at this stage. You don't necessarily have to know tetrionics in order to understand how the universe works or to get good grades, etc. But it's sure, once you get the mental picture that the geometry is giving you of how things works, it sure makes things a lot easier. It can sure help you expand and explain things that, like we've touched on gravity and the shape of matter and things like that in various other discussions, that you just can't get from the purely mathematical understanding or explanation of physics or the experimental work. I mean, like, to me it goes hand in glove, but perhaps that's because my training was electrical. Perhaps that made it a bit easier for me to bring these ideas together and develop this mental picture. But I do think the reward's worth the effort, because what I've discovered in the last 5 years is an understanding beyond par of anything I ever got from my schooling or even from the popular press and other textbooks on various topics. It's given me a very well-rounded picture of the universe and what it's doing and why it's doing what it does. I can only encourage people to take it on face value, learn the basics, and ask questions by all means. Fire me questions. I'm here to answer questions and explain things. Let's develop this and get an understanding that both the scientific and the experimental community can use, so that we can all come together and really get the planet into a better shape and increase our knowledge beyond what we can imagine. Because my growth in developing tetrionics theory has been immense, but I don't doubt for a second that there's a huge amount more to be gained out of the theory and its further development through people who have practical experience in devices, as well as people who have specific and well-focused scientific knowledge in different fields. We can all contribute and add to the development of the theory and expand it in ways I can't imagine. So that's what I see for it in the future. I just see these few knuckles and learning experiences along the way as just that. It was just a necessary part of the effort that had to go into getting this result so that others can make use of it.
Wonderful. Delvin, thank you so much.
Not a problem, Otto.
This is where I'd like to close off the recording. And as usual, come back to you immediately after. Yeah. Thank you.